Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry. We are back for another show, and Carol says, hey.
No, get it right, Frankenberry. That's not how she says it.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, Carol. Are you there, Carol?
Hey.
What? Mine was close.
No, and I'm actually giving Carol a 7.5 on her own hey, because normally it's a little more like, hey, this one was a little short. I would like you to do it again, please.
Hey.
There we go. Now we can start the show.
There we go. We got our silliness on board. Nice.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, I did want to start with a small little scolding for the three of us this week. A scolding because
are you the scolder?
I am the scoldee and the scolder. I'm okay. A dual scold because guys, when we recorded our show that was to air on Mother's Day, we made sure that we said Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And last week, I don't believe we said Happy Father's Day. So. I don't think so.
We did not.
Wow.
So shame on us.
Yep.
But yeah, because I mean, we're equal opportunity, you know,
we're
celebrating. Yeah. Yes, of course we are. So that was just an oversight on our part. Won't let it happen again.
Well, now our Happy Father's Day can stand out amongst all of them that happened on that day.
Yeah.
We'll wish it again.
But it's either a little bit late or a whole lot early, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. But you can look at it that way.
I will say that even though we didn't say so much about it on the air, I had a weekend full of junk food and celebration and cakes and chips and wine. It was just a really fun weekend last weekend, which led me to do something that a lot of people do. Carol, I even think you've done this a time or two in your past, but I have actually never done. And that is, I decided to do a 24-hour cleanse.
Yeah. Oh, what? You've never done that?
I have never, nope. I have wanted to. I have really admired people. And look, a 24-hour cleanse is something that most people can do standing on their heads, because usually, like, you can have varied lengths of cleanses, usually a 3-day or sometimes even a week. I've known a lot of people who have done cleanses before, like, a wedding or a big event. And I'm like, I don't know how you people do that. I made it a total of 12 hours. Which I actually think is pretty good. But I wanted to talk about it because it's the things that I observed in this 12-hour period, I think, are part PSA, part neuroses. And I think it could help a lot of people. But Carol, haven't you done a cleanse a time or two in the past? And maybe
nope.
Not recently.
Nope.
You've not, like, years ago done one?
No.
Ever.
Where, and by cleanse, it's like liquids only or something for...
Yeah, pretty much. For like a day or three. No?
No.
I haven't. I mean, the closest I came was the night before a colonoscopy.
Oh, yeah.
That's one serious cleanse right there.
That's a whole other experience. I can't speak from experience on that, but everybody that I know that's ever had one has vividly described the process, and it doesn't sound fun.
It's not, believe me.
At all. So, but I decided to do this. Well, first of all, I realize now in hindsight, I decided to do it for all the wrong reasons, because basically, I believe it or not, as much wine as I drink. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, I don't, my diet isn't all that bad. And really what I didn't want to cleanse so much as I just wanted to like make sure I didn't pack on a couple of pounds from partying. So that was my first mistake. But what I did was, because you know how I like to shop on the Facebook. The Facebook gets me with all the ads. They listen to all my conversations. They know I'm an easy mark. It happens all the time. That part's not going to change. But I bought this, like, it was a 3-day cleanse, but I figured I would only do a third of it off the Facebook. And what it was it's like 6, 7, 8 packets of stuff. That you like in the morning, you had to drink this one packet, and then for a snack, you'd drink another packet, and then for lunch, you did this packet. Well, anyway, here's what I discovered. So I it started out pretty good. I got up in the morning, I drank the first packet, which was just like a, you know, a lemon squeezy. You're just mixing these packets with water, all processed. And then there was a little snack packet, which I'm using air quotes, was a fruit smoothie. But of course, it wasn't a smoothie. It was just some powder that you mix with water.
And it
actually wasn't too bad, those first two. But what really got me, and this gets me every time I've tried it in the past, not with the cleanse, just to have it. But everybody touts this whole bone broth business. Bone broth thick.
It is supposed to be good for you.
And it's supposed to be really good for you. But I got to tell you guys, if you've not experienced it, anybody who's listening, it is the worst. Like, there is nothing, you can't dress it up enough to make it palatable. Literally, I still have a hoofy taste in my mouth. I can't. Hoof, like I was sucking on a cow's hoof. It's bad.
Did you hear the way she said that, Frankenberry?
You know what? The mental image is something I didn't need, really.
He's already tired.
But it's accurate. I mean, it is just, I mean, I guess so. Bone broth, I should probably look it up so I don't sound as ignorant as I do, but I guess it's, I don't know. Is it bone marrow turned powder? Is it crushed up? I don't really exactly know what bone broth is. The collagen from cow bones.
I'm not even sure either.
It tastes like crapola. And you could not possibly do enough to it. But here's the kicker. So that's really what sent me over the edge. That's when I was like turning a corner.
You were in hour number what when you consumed the liquid hoof?
When I consumed the liquid hoof, I was an hour about 6 or 7.
Okay.
And yeah, and so that really, really turned me off. But here's the thing that I discovered. Being on a cleanse, for anybody who's thinking about doing one, I think is 90% psychological. And here's why. I normally go, you guys. I get up in the morning. I'm not like stuffing my face full of crap. I usually go several hours without eating solid food during the day. And I do it easily, not a problem. It's a piece of cake. And I've been doing that for a long time.
That's an oxymoron, but go ahead.
Okay. But because I was so focused on this darn cleanse, yep, and having to make sure I ate this and then ate that and then did this, it screwed me all up. Like if I had just not thought about it, it would have been a lot easier. But I was so focused on this being a big deal that I had to throw in the towel. So I think if people really want to do a cleanse, you don't have to spend $100 on these packets of, you know, cow hubs. You really can do it on your own with some real food, and just, you got to wrap your head around it.
There one that was popular for a while? Maybe it still is. That's like a lemon and maple syrup or something. And that's all like water, lemon, maple syrup. That's all you have for 24 hours.
Water, lemon, maple syrup, and cayenne powder.
Oh, cayenne. That's right. Yep.
Yes. Really? Yes. Yeah. Because cayenne is supposed to get you moving, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and the maple syrup.
No, I don't know what you mean. Can you explain?
Yes, Jonna, please, details.
Never in a million years can I explain.
Tell us how many tiles are on your bathroom floor.
You're going to have to go to the Google for that.
The Google.
But isn't that something, like, it's just such, I don't know. For me, this whole cleanse thing was such a gimmick, and I failed at it because of that, after spending money to do that, which we could do all on our own. Now, I don't know if anybody listening is going to be like, no, 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 and going to want to write some hate mail for that, that I'm coming out officially as anti-cleanse. That's my stance. I'm going to, you know, give me a sign. I'll march. I'm anti-cleanse.
I'll march.
And I don't think if you kind of, I mean, so here's the thing. Like,
doesn't your much younger boyfriend do a cleanse on a regular basis or no, fasting or something?
No, he used to do that cayenne pepper, maple syrup, lemon water thing. Yeah, because he thought it made his 8-pack abs look better. I'm like, it's hard to have 8-pack abs that don't look good, you moron. But he goes that.
And you know, Jonna, I kind of do this sort of thing every Sunday.
What do you mean?
I basically don't eat on Sundays for some reason.
Now, what? Why?
And it's not intentional. I just don't. You know, I'll make myself dinner on Saturday night, and I'll make myself something that I can eat during the week. But Sundays come, I get up early, I hang out on the computer, I try to go to bed early, and then before I know it, I haven't eaten, and I'm good.
Wow.
That's kind of like an intermittent fast, which is actually—
I can't say the same.
No. Sunday's your fun day, though, Carol. You got to eat on Sunday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm holding on still the majority of the week, and 4 out of 7 is technically a majority. I eat healthy.
Well, you've never had— I've known you for like 100 years now, and you have never, ever, ever even hinted at having a weight problem. So whatever you're doing.
Well, thank you. And I wouldn't say that I do either. I would say I'm a little thicker than I'd like to be, but I wouldn't consider it a weight problem.
Thicker? Seriously? Carol, yeah. You turn sideways, I can't see you. What the hell are you talking about?
No, you haven't seen me, Frankenberry.
Frankenberry, can we go in the other room? Can we go in the other room for a minute?
Yeah, come on. Let's go. Let's go in the— let's go in the sitcom.
Hang on.
You guys suck.
We'll be right back. Frankenberry.
Yeah.
I have seen Carol lately, and she's a little cuckoo for saying that thicker statement. Yeah. She still looks like if she stuck her tongue out, she would look like a zipper. But
yeah, I'm with you there. I have seen Carol a couple of times in the last number of months, and yeah, she is— cuckoo is a good way to put it.
I think cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Okay, yeah. Let's get back. Okay, we're back.
Okay, thank you. You can hear us now, Carol.
It's getting lonely out here in the living room while you two are in the kitchen.
Understood. We didn't want to leave you in there too long.
Okay. Like stuck in the bathroom again, right?
Okay. Jonna and I, though, Carol, did come to a consensus while we were in the sitcom kitchen.
Okay.
You're nuts.
You're cuckoo.
Yeah, cuckoo, as Jonna put it.
Okay.
Yeah. because you look fantastic, but it's funny that Frankenberry, you're doing this intermittent fast without realizing you're doing an intermittent fast.
Yeah, I know it sounds weird, but by the time I get to the point on a Sunday, and I think I've mentioned this to you guys before, is that I always shoot for, you know, one Sunday if I can, to just try to go to bed early, just lay down and just stay in bed. And, you know, and when I get to that point, you know, maybe around 5 o'clock, I'll suddenly realize, well, Steve, you know, you haven't eaten yet. You haven't eaten today. And then I'll say, well, I don't care because I'm going to bed. And then I'm done, you know. So and then I'm back to a week at a normal schedule of, you know, 3 meals. But for some reason, Sundays, it slips my mind.
And you don't get hungry.
I forget to eat.
Yeah, I don't get hungry on Sundays, no.
God,
that is so weird.
I graze on Sundays.
Do you ever— let me ask you that. Now, Frankenberry, this probably won't pertain to you because you're not a wine guy. I think you're more of a beer guy in
cheap
terms
beer,
of
yes.
alcohol. But Carol, I do know that you're a wine girl.
Yeah.
Do you— so sometimes Okay, so I'm trying to phrase this properly. Have you ever opened a bottle of wine on a weekend? Let's say you open a bottle of wine maybe before dinner time on a Saturday. And then by the time you go to bed, hypothetically, that wine bottle is finished and you are the only one drinking it. Has that ever happened to you?
Not yet.
No?
No, because it's, I would say it's plausible. But the reason it hasn't happened is I usually, it's rare that I will have wine and Craig won't. So will we open a second bottle? Yeah.
Okay. So
could I feasibly have consumed the entire bottle of the first bottle over afternoon and evening?
Mm-hmm. Okay, possibly. Good. Because hypothetically, I didn't want to be alone. Hypothetically.
That's exactly asking what for I was a friend. Jonna just wants to not be alone.
But it doesn't happen very often, but there have been times where I maybe started around 4 and then at around 10 or 11, I'm pouring the last drop in a glass and I'm like, uh-oh.
I got nobody else to blame but me. But well, so here's the thing. For people who don't drink wine, maybe it seems like a lot, but it's 4 full glasses over 6-7 hours.
With 6-7 hours. And a full wine glass, by the way, is 5 ounces. That's a full glass of wine. Not like the kind when your grandmother used to fill up the wine glass to the brim. That's 2 glasses. A full glass of wine is 5 ounces.
Yeah, but plus, how many ounces are in a bottle? I think we get more than...
It's like 20 or 22. It's something like that.
All right, I'm going
to
look.
But who's counting?
Yeah, not that I have any here.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because some wines... you could drink an entire bottle over whatever, 6-7 hours, wake up the next morning and feel wonderful. And then some wines, you could drink a couple of glasses, wake up the next morning and feel like you got hit by a Mack truck. It's the oddest thing.
Well, yeah.
So the moral of the story is drink good wine.
Yeah, exactly.
So that doesn't happen.
Hey, I've discovered particular cheap beers that'll knock me out when I try to get up the next day, monster headaches. And I've noticed some others that, that don't.
Well, it's got to be the poison, right? The more poisonous, whatever it is you're drinking, the worse you're going to feel the next day. All about the poison. But anyway, so I made it 12 hours on the cleanse because I was too focused on it being a cleanse as opposed to just maybe naturally trying to detox from a chocolate sugar alcohol weekend and therefore wasted my time and my money.
Well, it sounds like it was giving you anxiety as well, trying to stick to
it. sometimes I give you softballs, Curly. I give you softballs. That was a softball. You are welcome.
Yeah, that was right down the middle of the plate. That
boom.
Right there, boom! Like she could have closed her eyes and still hit that one.
Exactly. You teed that up for her.
As a matter of fact, it did give me anxiety. Why do you ask?
Oh, you're funny. Okay, so in all seriousness, not at all making fun of anxiety, but the fact of the matter is. Coming up, our guest today is Lori Manny-Lentini. She is the author of Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. She works in the industry serving, I think, over 14,000 people in the mental health field. She deals with anxiety herself. Both of her children have anxiety, and she's written a wonderful book to help people understand what's going on better, as well as, and what's very important to her is to get rid of the stigma around mental health. Like, why are we ashamed to go get help when our brain is what's not operating right? But if we have something wrong with our heart or our stomach or whatever, no, you don't think twice about it. So she is going to be joining us coming up at the break. And I also am proud to say that Anxiety Insights is a one of the books I published under Little Pink Press. But she's lovely and really, really helpful topic. And when we come back, we will be speaking to Lori Manny-Lentini.
All right. That sounds good. You are listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilvar and Carol Pesci and myself. And we will be back with our guest in just a few. Stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here this morning with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now to get to our guest. And we have Lori Lentini with us today. And she's going to talk to us about her book and maybe help us out with a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah, this is an extra special guest for me. I know her personally. She's a beautiful human being, very intelligent. She is going to be talking to us about her book, Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. We're talking with Lori Manny Lentini. She is local. She is a respected mental health advocate. She lives with an anxiety disorder herself. She works as a senior vice president for a large not-for-profit. I mentioned this before a break in New York. They serve over 14,000 people a year with mental health, developmental disabilities, and substance abuse disorders. She brings forth that experience as an executive, as a patient herself, and as a parent of grown children with mental health issues. Lori has written this book, Anxiety Insights, to help people understand mental health challenges better. It's not coming from a clinical standpoint, although her daughter, Dr. Nicole Lentini, has contributed to the book. Most importantly, she wants to help eliminate the stigma associated with people who have mental health disorders. And it's a privilege, as I mentioned before break, that I was part of helping Lori bring her baby to light. This is a book published proudly by Little Pink Press. So Lori Manny Lentini, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much and good morning. I really appreciate this opportunity. Since we spoke about a year ago and my book came out, the number of people looking for help with anxiety, depression, and grief has just skyrocketed. So I think it's just such a timely topic. And I appreciate you taking the time and dedicating some attention to this because so many people are in need right now.
Well, and I think, and this is one of the things that is central to your mission is I think we're getting better where people will say, oh, I was talking with my therapist, or where there's less shame associated with, look, if you need help, get the help, and that's okay. Don't judge yourself and don't judge others for that.
I absolutely agree. I mean, let's face it, stress and anxiety exist in all of our lives. It's just a matter of how much and how debilitating it is. But if you're human, you have emotions. And if you have emotions, sometimes they're hard to handle. So that is, you know, just a fact. And, you know, you're exactly right. I'm really, my mission is to really eliminate the stigma because I personally don't understand it. You know, why mental health is treated differently than any other kind of a physical health issue. And the stigma that is so attached to it. I mean, I see stigma as a prejudice based on a stereotype that results in discrimination. And there's so much focus in the world today on fairness and not treating people differently. So, you know, this is just something that's near and dear to my heart. As you said, I have anxiety, you know, it runs in my family. My mother had, you know, serious mental health issues, culminating with dementia right before she died. My children, you know, have numerous, you know, general anxiety disorder, social anxiety, depression. And my point is that, one, I never realized until I started talking about it and wrote the book, how many people don't realize how common it is and they go through this experience alone. And that's something I feel I can change. I feel I could help people and normalize this experience. And there was so much I wish I had known when I was raising my children that I just want to share that insight and then some of the personal and professional perspective that I have. Everywhere I go, I talk with people about anxiety. It's shocking to me. I think I'm some kind of magnet or something, whether I'm, you know, online in the store or I'm talking to somebody at a softball game. I mean, heck, the other night I was on a social media dating site and I was talking to somebody and they were saying how stressful their life is. And we got into this back and forth for a half hour about his anxiety, ended up telling him about my book. It wasn't a connection, but he bought my book and thanked me. So it's everywhere.
Wow.
It's so important. I think that people are talking more about it. Lori, what I'd like to do, I know one of the big questions on people's mind are, when is it just normal life anxiety? And when is it something where you would benefit from seeking help for? But before we do that, I want to back up for a moment and tell us, what made you want to write this book? What's the story behind you bringing anxiety insights to the world?
It came about when I went with my daughter to Vegas to celebrate my 55th birthday, which was a couple of years ago now. And we were just talking about the experiences that we had with her growing up. Now that she, you know, was in medical school and was reflecting on all of that, we gained a new realization on what an impact that it had on our life and our family dynamics, and really thought that we could make a difference, because what our goal is to normalize it. And to do that, I really want to change the face of anxiety. So it looks like me, it looks like you, it looks like your next door neighbor, it looks like your kid. That's okay. So we really felt like between our combined experience with, you know, my experience in mental health, her education as a doctor, and just what we had been through personally, that we could connect with that, and hopefully we could help them to reach out and get the help that they need, because it's okay to do that. So that's really what that came out of, was a discussion we had in Vegas over a couple bottles of wine.
Oh, we were just talking about wine before the break.
Here we go again. Topic.
Right, bring it around full circle. So can you speak for a moment, Lori, and then as a parent, I would like you to offer advice if there's parents listening who think that their child may be dealing with something that could benefit from help. But help, give us some framework for getting an idea on, am I just a normal human being that has a lot of crap going on in my life and I feel anxiety? Or is there potentially a borderline or a full disorder going on that meeting with a professional would help me? How do you know that?
Well, I think the best way to gauge that, well, first of all, if you're not sure, then definitely go see somebody and seek out help, because we'll deal with that. But I think the main way that one can determine that is if it's impacting significant areas of your life that are making it impossible for you to meet your goals. So if it is impacting your ability to sleep, your ability to have a healthy, productive relationship, your ability to go to work, your ability to enjoy the things you used to enjoy, if it's impacting a significant life area for, you know, everyone's different, a period of time, I'd say more than a couple of weeks, then I think it's definitely something that you could need help with. And it could be short term. It doesn't mean you have a long-term mental illness. It could mean you need to talk something through, or you need to learn some coping or self-care skills. There's as many people as there are in the world, is as many different variations of you know, what their anxiety and their mental health issues look like. So that there's no one cure or one way to know. It's just, if it's really impacting your ability to be happy and successful, then there's probably something there that can help.
And something I admittedly had my own stigmas before I met you and worked with you on your book. I used to think if you had mental health challenges and you went to go talk to a psychiatrist, that's going to mean a decade or the rest of your life, every week sitting on a couch talking to someone. And maybe it will. But what your daughter points out as a doctor in the book is that, am I using the term right? Sometimes it's a biochemical thing going on in your body and in your brain that can absolutely benefit from medication.
Absolutely. There's so many different things. It could be genetics. It could be a life instance that happened. It could be trauma. And if it's something, you know, if it's like a trauma that just happened, a major loss. I mean, during COVID, we all had major loss. There was grief, not only of the people we lost, but of the lives we had and the things we were able to do. And people react to that as trauma, and that could re-traumatize something that they've gone through or that they're not even aware they've gone through in the past. And sometimes, you know, short-term therapy or medication can really help. Therapy isn't, you know, it's not the therapy of the 1970s where you were in it for life and you talked about, you know, from the day you were born forward. It's really more about talking about the presenting problem and resolving it and then moving on. The point of therapy nowadays is to resolve your issue and move on and get out of therapy. So it's not what people think it used to be.
Lori, this is Jonna. Can therapy, can we say it has evolved in a sense, like, for example, and you had mentioned the pandemic. I think a lot of people coming out of this pandemic either are okay with saying, you know what, I think I need some help because the last year has just been hell and I feel anxious and I need some help. And we kind of blame our need for therapy on the pandemic, and that seems acceptable. But what my point was going to be is, you get up every morning, and if you're smart or if you're able to, you do some exercises, or, you know, a couple times a week, you go for a nice walk. You do things to physically take care of yourself on a regular basis, whether you're overweight or not overweight. You can be in perfect shape or not perfect shape. Can't we do, or shouldn't we do, the same thing emotionally with our mental health that we do with our physical health? Just sort of check in every once in a while with a therapist or a group or something to make sure that we're functioning to our highest capacity.
Yeah, I think it's very important, because I don't think our physical health can exist without our mental health. I think it goes together. One impacts the other. So I think to, you know, regularly check in on that, or, you know, see if you need some assistance with it, is really important. There's also, through a lot of EAPs and the Mental Health Association, there's surveys that you can go online and take, and you go through a series of questions, and they'll offer you some information on suggestions on perhaps if you need to, you know, you would benefit from seeking some assistance. So there are assessments and different ways that you can reach out and kind of get a mental health check without going to a professional. But on that note, I think one of the really great things, as you said, about the pandemic is, you know, if that's the excuse that it's okay to talk about mental health, then hallelujah, you know, let's take right. it from there and move it forward. But one of the really dramatic changes that I've seen is they took away and reduced all of the restrictions about teletherapy when the pandemic hit.
Yep.
That has had such a tremendous impact on folks, because it's not just the stigma of, you know, nobody knows because I'm sitting at my kitchen table. It's also, you know, remote areas where people didn't have access or transportation, or people that have social anxiety that couldn't go outside. It's just, it's opened it up to the whole world, which has just been fabulous.
That is a wonderful thing. Lori, can I read something from your book?
Sure.
And this is on the specifically about the stigma attached with it. And that goes for how we view it with other people and with ourselves, because your daughter in the book talks about being in an emergency room with people with physical symptoms, and they rule out everything and realize that it's anxiety that is causing real physical symptoms, and the resistance that she faces time and time again of people saying, I'm not crazy. And that's not our point. But anyway, I'd like to read about the stigma. Does it really make a difference? What is causing your stress and anxiety? It is your mental health, not a competition. Anxiety is anxiety. If it is affecting the quality of your life and you need relief and help, what right does anyone else have to measure or judge your pain? Although our fears and emotions come in different sizes and varieties, adding shame and blame to any of these difficult life changes, events, or illnesses puts up barriers and prevents some of us from seeking medical care. And this hurts us all.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Absolutely true. And I wanted to just circle back to the earlier question, because I want to be sure we're talking about young people. Young people yes. age 11 to 17 are struggling the most and have been during this pandemic. They've been the hardest hit. And statistics show that upwards of 60% of our younger people are not in treatment. They're not getting the help they need. So I'm a very strong advocate of, you know, being sure that we're tuned in to changes in behavior, significant mood changes, different things going on with our kids, because the earlier we can, what I learned, which I didn't know, when I was raising my kids, is the sooner we seek treatment and start to help them accept that they have anxiety and embrace ways that they can cope with it, so that they gain the ability to handle it internally as opposed to it's something that's happening to them, really makes a difference in how they see themselves and how they go forward in life. So it is just absolutely essential.
And now, as a parent of adult children with anxiety, and you mentioned in our interview as well as in your book that it was a long time before you fully understood what was going on with your daughter first, and then secondly, your son. What advice do you have for a parent right now who is concerned about the mental health of their child? And sometimes it's even before they become teens, as you said, 11 to 17, where do they begin? Does it start with a conversation with the child? Does it start with a conversation with a mental health professional? If a parent is concerned, where do they begin?
I think it absolutely starts, with the child, with talking with them. I think one of the most helpful things we can do is be vulnerable ourselves and talk about, you know, maybe a way to open the door is to sit down with your child and say, boy, you know, I'm really having a tough time, or this has impacted me, or I'm stressed about this, or I've been upset about this, so that you role model. It's okay to have, you know, negative emotions. And then, you know, just as with any relationship with a friend or anything, once you open the door, usually the conversation is easier and they know there's compassion there and understanding. So I think that's important. I also think that, being present, really, you know, put the phone down, turn the TV off. I always found, as many people do, my best conversations with my kids were in the car because they're kind of the captive audience. But bring something up, you know, maybe talk about something you read or something they could relate to, or buy, you know, I'm also working on a children's book on anxiety, buy a book on anxiety. And if it's a younger child, read it to them. And just talk about emotions and be sure that you're role modeling, processing them in positive ways in front of them so that they can learn that. Practice self-care. Do self-care with them. Show them how to, you know, do some yoga with them. Meditate. Go for a walk. Listen to a podcast. Just, I really think it's in connecting, role modeling, and just showing them that if you are stressed or you're depressed or you're sad or you're having an issue, there's nothing wrong with you. That's called being a human. And just show them it's okay so that they feel free to talk about it. That's just my basic best advice.
That's brilliant. It really is. I think and I'm a dog mom. So I've not had been in the position to raise a human child. But I would imagine a parent feels like they have to have it together all the time. They're the role model. They need to have all the answers. They need to be able to fix things. And in general, whether as a parent, and what I've learned just as being a human being and a friend and a sibling and whatever, when you act like you have it all together, I think you actually disconnect from people. When you have the courage to say, I'm not in a good place today, or I'm having a hard time, you open the door, you connect, you bond with people. And I think it's the same with your children. You don't want to have a full on breakdown in front of them. If you can avoid it, if you can't, okay, that's, you know, you're human. But to do exactly what you said, to say, hey, I'm struggling, you know, I'm here with you, but I'm struggling. And that doesn't mean I'm a failure. It doesn't mean I'm a disaster. It means I'm human, and it's okay to struggle sometimes.
I agree. And helping them name their emotions, you know, I mean, sad is a word, but you know, there's 15 different ways you could actually be feeling. And I think to help your child process and understand what they're actually feeling and, you know, give them a minute to think about what's causing it. And more importantly, you know, ask them what would make them feel better, because you don't know. You don't know. They may not know, but, you know, we can't assume, oh, let's go for a walk because that's what works for me. That might not be what works for them. You have to work with them on, you know, what brings them relief, what helps them to reprogram their mind or think about something differently, and then engage in that with them.
I love that. And go ahead, Jonna.
Sorry, I think, you know, this year especially, this year, this school year now is over, but as maybe when we go into the fall, I think kids had it so incredibly rough. You mentioned it earlier, like they really did have it the roughest between having to learn remotely from home, especially the younger kids, not being able to socialize. Their parents are going through the pandemic with them. It was like, it was just one big soup of stuff that nobody had dealt with before. And it was really hard on these kids. And I wouldn't be surprised, or I probably would be happy, if in the fall, schools would incorporate some of this into the curriculum so that kids know it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to have anxiety and talk about it before it becomes a bigger problem. Like, get it out. Let the kids be able to talk about it openly without fear of repercussion or being labeled a nerd or whatever the heck kids do to each other these days. It wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I've been trying to think of ways I could donate some books or maybe do some seminars at, you know, in my local school district, because I think, you know, professionals, teachers, you know, college professors, anyone in a helping profession, people in childcare, I mean, I think the more they understand this and are trained in it, the better it's going to be for everyone. And I think the stressors are going to be different for kids too. I've already talked to 3 parents just in the last week of elementary, you know, age children going into school, and all 3 of them are already refusing to go back to school. They're like, I'm not doing it. So they've gotten used to it. They're safe. They're more comfortable at home. They don't have the, you know, like you said, maybe the pressure of other kids judging them or picking on them, or, you know, maybe they are anxious children. And I think getting our kids to actually go back to school and re-engage is going to be a challenge for some parents that they're going to need support with.
Absolutely.
Such an important topic. And I think it affects all of us, right? It's just the varying degree, and depending on what's going on in our lives and with around us and within us. Lori, you have some pretty exciting new projects going on. I would like, and I know you're not yet open, but I would love for you to share what you have going on. I know it's a labor of love for you.
Yeah. So this last year, as with many folks, my family has experienced tremendous loss. In the last year, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, and some aunts and uncles have passed away. I was very close to my parents. I was taking care of them. So that grief is also, you know, a mental health issue that manifests in many different ways and turns into anxiety and depression. And what came about is I grew up on a horse farm in Goshen. And when my dad passed, he left me the farm, and it has great memories to me. He was my hero. He was the person that was there for me my whole life, that believed in me and encouraged me. And what I'm in the process of doing is I'm taking his farm and I'm turning it into a wellness farm, and kind of working on, you know, doing some remodeling out in the back by the barn. And I'm going to be, I got my life coaching certificate. I'm going to be doing career and life coaching there. I'm going to be doing grief groups around a fire pit, nice outdoor nature, relaxing kind of area. I'm already hosting a literature and life book circle, which is reading inspirational self-help books and then talking about them with folks. And I'm going to be hosting sunset yoga and caps and corks art projects, kind of like wine and sip, but using recycled wine corks and beer caps to do that. And it's going to be called Legacy and Lace Acres, because legacy is for my dad and lace is for me. And it's just a place where I feel peace and I feel connected to what I've lost and who I've lost. And I want to bring that forward to other people. And I've also just started writing a book on grief based on the experience of the last year. In the last year, anybody who has passed away knows it's not your typical grief. You couldn't be with them in the hospital because of state regulations. Right. They died alone. They died alone in nursing homes. You couldn't have a funeral. There was no closure. And I think that there's a lot of healing that needs to happen. And I'm feeling like that's a good place to move forward and carry that legacy and my mission forward together.
Lori, what you're doing is a beautiful thing. You are taking your personal struggles and you are alchemizing that into something that is going to give peace and guidance and inspiration to other people. And that's a beautiful, phenomenal thing. And it's so Lori.
It makes me happy.
There you go. I'm
even more happy right now.
We're about to wrap up here, but just one other point I want to make, and is it's a deep topic. It's a stressful topic just to think about it and talk about it. But the fact of the matter is, what your book Anxiety Insights also offers is hope to people. Your daughter is a prime example who deals with mental health issues and has become a doctor. Mm-hmm. So while, yes, this may be something you deal with, there is help out there, and you can still go on to achieve and accomplish the things that you want to.
100% agree. Absolutely.
And in some cases, and in her case, and in your case, go on to serve at an even greater degree, not in spite of, but because of the mental health challenges.
And I have to add that my son is joining the mission. He just switched. He was in, he had got accepted into Northwestern Medical School for PT. And during the pandemic, he had such issues and connected with a counselor that literally changed his life, that he turned down that opportunity and he went to grad school to be a licensed social worker. So now the entire family is in the mental
health. Wow.
Wow.
Oh, I love it. That's wonderful.
I don't
wonderful.
Know what we're going to do together someday, but I hope it's something awesome.
Oh, good. We're wrapping up here with Lori Manny Lentini. She is the author of Anxiety Insights, What Gets to Us and What Gets Us Through. Where can people get your book? I know the answer to it, but where can people get your book? And where can they learn more about you and the projects that you're currently working on and have coming in the future?
My book is available on Amazon. And I am on Instagram at Anxiety Insights. I'm on Facebook at Lori Manny Lentini at Anxiety Insights. And in about 3 weeks, I'm building a new website with a consultant, which is Legacy and Lace Acres. So that will be up and running, and we'll start offering some services and build our portfolio as we go forward and grow in about 3 weeks.
All right. I love it. Lori. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Thank you for all of the courage you've shown to bring your story and your family's story to light, and the dedication you have to help people with mental health issues and help reduce the stigma associated with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us time to talk about this essential topic. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much, Lori, for joining us. And Jonna, you're going to hate me for saying this, but Carol is brilliant again. She worked the word alchemize into the conversation.
No, it was when she right said word. That, I winced. I'm like, oh, dang it.
I could see your face there, Lori. It's kind of an ongoing thing where Carol is always brilliant and Jonna is, well, kind of dumb.
She's never dumb. She blames herself for asking the stupid questions. And stupid is dumb. S-T-O-O-P-I-T.
What happened to there is no stupid question? Come on, guys.
Yeah, Jonna.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Lori, thank you again for joining us. You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and the brilliant Carol Pesci. And we will be back with segment number 3 in just a few. So please stick around.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here this morning with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frank and Barry.
Barry. Ooh, she was... Sounds like there's anger in that Barry.
I was just going to say, I think she's still mad at me for the whole alchemized, brilliant, dumb thing.
Well, during the commercial, I was going to come back, and instead of saying hello, Frankenberry, I was going to say hello, Newman.
I'm sorry, but and you know, and the best part is, Carol, you worked it in so smoothly.
Yeah, but it was just the right word.
I know, but it's not like, well, people aren't walking around dropping the word alchemize every now and then. You know what I mean?
You're a smooth talker, you.
You got a gift.
Well, it was nice to have Lori join us and give us an idea about anxiety and maybe some tips on things to help ourselves out.
Yeah, and stop shaming your others or yourself, or you know, looking at the eyes that you're broken or you're different. We all deal with anxiety. Oh. My gosh, you know, it's just, you know, to the extent what you do for the duration, how much it affects you, and at what point can you get some support to alleviate it? There's no shame in that. If you're sick to your stomach, you break a bone, you don't try to reset that bone yourself. You go to somebody who's qualified to help you heal.
I probably would try to set it myself first.
John is searching for two sticks and some string.
You know, whatever works. Okay, so enough about that. Let me give you my impression. On the side, I've been doing impressions. Did I tell you guys that?
No.
No, I did not.
Because I just started doing impressions. All right.
Oh, God. Guess is it going to be me?
Guess who I am.
All right.
Okay, here's my impression. Ready?
Okay.
Blah, 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 blah. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Blah, 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 blah.
Dick Van Dyke?
Mary Poppins?
Nope. Okay, ready? Here, I'll do another one. Blah, 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 blah. Anti-disestablishmentarianism. Blah, 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 blah. Who am I?
I've never used that word, but I know you're trying to be me.
Yeah.
I kind of. Ding, 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 ding. Pretty good, huh? Pretty good.
Now, all right. So now both you bitches know now that in addition to nailing the Sagu, I'm going to try to work and alchemize in every show wherever I can. Okay? Okay, pumpkin.
Oh.
And she'll do it.
That's not going to be easy, Curly. That is not going to be easy.
No.
All right.
All right.
Fine. We'll see how you do.
Okay. It is a goal.
Hashtag goals.
Hashtag alchemy. What did you do? Alchemize? What kind of
alchemize?
Alchemized?
Yeah, it was the verb. Yeah.
Alchemized. Okay. Not with a D. Alchemize. Just alchemize.
Oh, wait. No. Wasn't it alchemization?
No.
That's
not the word.
The alchemist, Missoula? What was it?
Yeah. All right. Well, you've been listening to Happy Hour.
Missoula.
With Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And thank you again for Lori for joining us today and talking to us about anxiety. And I want you all to, if you can, take a listen to the whole show if you've missed any of it, because you'll find out where you can find that book, and it might just be able to provide you some help if you need it. But anyway, ladies, thank you very much. Audience, thank you as well. And we will be back again, same time here next week.
Be there or be alchemized. What?
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Well, see you next week.
Yep, see you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.